Go.
Good morning, good morning, good morning from Resistance Radio, www.enlightenradio.org. This is your host every Wednesday, Stuart Acuff on Resistance Radio, and I'm so happy to have my great friend and leader, John Case, with me. John is the founder, president, CEO, COO, chief cook. I'm still the bottle washer of Enlightened Radio. And as always, on Wednesday, he is our engineer and co-host today. Welcome, brother John Case. How are you this morning?
I'm in a bad mood.
Well, there's a lot to be in a bad mood about, but why are you in a bad mood this morning?
First of all, I feel that I've been sold to China without even asking me.
Okay. Yeah, that's the essence of slavery.
Second of all, I feel like, you know, I just listened to Ted Bettner, you know, explain to me how, you know, the net result of the tax bill that apparently all the Republicans are looking like they're going to vote for here in the state. Is that West Virginia will have to pay more taxes.
Yep. And let's get into that really quick. Let me just say, so hold that thought, John. I want to come back to that. But let me ask you, please, if you're listening right now, November 29th, 2017, if you're listening either on November 29th or November 30th, please call your senator right now. And in West Virginia, call both your senators. 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. Tell them to vote against this tax plan scam, because it's nothing but a scam for the largest transfer of wealth in recent memory from us. What used to be called the middle class, but clearly is the working class. Everybody below the level of rich to the wealthy. It's like, how much more can they want? Do they need? It's a phony tax plan. It's a massive transfer of wealth. It intends no good for average Americans and average West Virginians. So please, make this call right now, 202-224-3121. And if you're in Martinsburg, actually, if you're anywhere in the Eastern Panhandle right now, at this moment that I'm talking, please change your plans for the day to meet us at 11 a.m. That's just in, you know, very shortly. At 11 a.m. at Senator Shelley Moore Capito's district office, I mean, not district office, but Panhandle office in Martinsburg, West Virginia, 300 Foxcroft Avenue. We're going to go caroling today. We're going to carol to, we're going to sing carols of resistance and carols of struggle to Shelley Moore Capito and to Alex Mooney. Both of them.
Any particular this morning. Any particular carols that you know of yet that on the...
This was organized on the fly, John, because McConnell is trying to jam it through so quickly, and I don't think anybody predicted this sort of legislative schedule. So, no, they were writing new lyrics last night.
With your poetic talents, you could rewrite Silent Night, I believe, here.
I could. I could. Silent Night, Darker Night.
Blacker Night, Abysmal
Blacker
Night.
Night.
You know, Hellish
what
Night.
What happened to the moonlight?
No moon, no light.
No bright tonight.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, yes, right.
Hey, John, why don't you lift our spirits a little bit with a little bit of Stone Memphis Soul. It don't get no better than this.
Okay.
Hold on, I'm coming from Sam and Dave.
All right, man, here it comes.
Yes. There Sam and Dave.
Yeah.
Sam and Dave from Memphis, Tennessee, Stax Studios. Great song. On Macklemore Avenue in Memphis, Tennessee. You know, John, people can't tell from listening to this radio broadcast every week. But as you know, I put a lot of preparation into this. And I even try to match the songs up to what we're talking about or how I'm feeling or the kind of mood I want the show to set. But I just put in Hold On, I'm Coming by Sam and Dave to give us some energy and to remind us that we are not alone. Somebody's coming along to help us out. We've got one another. So, John, you were talking about, you just read something about West Virginia losing money in the tax plan scam.
Right.
Can you say anything more about that?
Well, I mean, the net amount of taxes coming out of West Virginia is going to rise, and it's going to rise primarily on the incomes under $30,000 a year, okay? They're going to end up paying more.
Wow.
And, plus, I mean, there's not really any beneficiaries. There's not that many rich estates or families in West Virginia that I mean, 100 or so, something like that. And I believe that Justice is the only billionaire that actually is in the state.
Is that right?
Okay, he may be. I heard that said. I don't, no, don't quote me entirely on that. But so there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's and of course, one of the big deals that Senator Byrd negotiated for many years was that West Virginia, like Alaska and some other poorer states, but that have great natural resources, were subsidized. They have more federal money comes into the state than leaves the state. That's been true for a long time, actually. But now it's going to be even less. Now it's just going the way.
And the terrible thing, John, I mean, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I want to make the political point, you know, really strong on that point, which is that we have certainly one senator, the Republican Shelley Moore Capito, the GOP Shelley Moore Capito, who is fine with moving from a net gain in federal money vis-a-vis taxation to moving to a net loss in federal money vis-a-vis taxation. So what we're saying here is that one of the poorest states in the country, West Virginia, with I think the second or third lowest education in the country, falling even further as we have suffered education budget cuts, is subsidizing the richest people in the country. For what purpose? And they say it's to create new jobs. They go back to this trickle-down economics idea that just doesn't work. You know, John, you're the economist on the show. I play an economist on the radio sometimes and sometimes on TV, but I ain't an economist. But you remember, as I do, back in 1980 and 81, as they were talking about, as the Reagan administration was talking about supply-side economics and tax cuts.
Right.
And, you know, they had this theory, right? And it was a plausible theory that tax cuts would create investment, which would create jobs. It was a plausible theory, and they ran hard on it. And now, 40-odd years later, we know it does not work. The data is in. Tax cuts will not spur investment. It is not happening. It hasn't happened. It's not going to happen. The whole tax plan scam is built on a lie. Now, am I wrong about that, John?
No, you're not, because I believe that, my brother Jim Mattless predicted in 1976, that there was a very deliberate and conscious abolishment of the New Deal and a transfer of wealth long term that was being contemplated by the Business Roundtable, and that was what was reflected in the campaigns of Ronald Reagan and even to a certain extent Jimmy Carter. And that came to pass, and here we are 40 years later. And you know, I remember Jim being almost like a John the Baptist about predicting this. And
Well, he was right. Here we are, you know, now after 40 years of stagnant wages, and now after so much wealth leaving the country to overseas tax havens. And now after we have lower indices of every form of quality of life and standard of living. Let me remind everybody, please, if you haven't called today, call your senators, Republican and Democratic, today. They voted the bill out of committee last night, Tuesday, November 28th. They intend to vote this bill on the floor of the Senate today or tomorrow. So please call right now, 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. And please, if you can change your schedule today, or if you're in Martinsburg and you're working this morning and you can take an early lunch, meet us at Shelley Moore Capito's office on 300 Foxcroft Avenue in Martinsburg, West Virginia, at 11 a.m. this morning, coming up soon. I will be there. That's why we're a little bit early this morning from the red caboose on enlightenradio.org, is because of this caroling. We're going to do a little bit of what we used to call guerrilla theater, John Case. We're going to go caroling to our senator and to our rotten member of the House of Representatives, Alex Mooney.
There's not much to be said about him.
Reminding them that we know that the tax plan scam is a fraud.
He's pretty hard to, you know, take in one swallow.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you know, that's why I've already committed to, and I'm already working for Aaron Scheinberg.
Right.
Hometown guy right here in Martinsburg. I'm so excited to be on his campaign and with him. An Iraq war veteran, a progressive, good man, talks about the common good all the time. And a real patriot, and somebody who'll make us proud in Congress. I'm going to be talking a lot more about Aaron in future shows, and we're going to have him on this show as we get a little deeper into the campaign. But I can't talk about Mooney without talking about the alternative, which is a great alternative.
That's right. So there you go. There's hope. Hope.
There's hope. Yes. So there's also hope on this tax bill. So here are some of the Republicans that aren't a yes yet. Ron Johnson of Wisconsin is not a yes. He voted for the bill last night in committee, but he did not, after the committee meeting, when they asked him if he would vote to move the bill forward past any kind of a filibuster, he did not answer that. And he certainly didn't answer on how he would vote on the bill on the floor. Just folks, last night, it would be a mistake to read too much into the committee votes in terms of how they're going to vote on the floor. And the reason is this, because I've got a little bit of experience with trying to get a federal bill passed the filibuster. And, you know, one of the things that you do is, if you've got enough for passage of the bill, but you just can't get it past the 60-vote threshold on a filibuster, you say to people, you don't have to vote yes, just get it to the floor. You don't have to vote yes, just get it to the floor. And I'm sure that was at work last night when number 45, Rump, went to the Capitol to twist some arms. So Ron Johnson voted in committee last night, yes, but he is not committed on final passage and certainly not on procedural votes. Senator Steve Daines of Minnesota is not a yes. He and Johnson are both say they're concerned about the budget and the deficit. McCain is not a yes.
Right.
Collins is not a yes. Her big problem on the bill, she doesn't mind the massive transfer of wealth. Her problem on the bill is if they take out the funding subsidies for the Obamacare exchanges, the ACA will collapse. She will, in effect, if she allows that to happen with her vote, she will be taking a lot of people off of health care in Maine.
Jeff Flake voted.
I suspect Flake will. I don't see how Flake can vote for this. I mean, he's cast himself as a true conservative his whole career. This is a deficit debt busting bill. Would create another $1.5 trillion worth of deficit and debt just to go to the richest amongst us. And Flake has deeply personal reasons for opposing it. Hard for me to see him getting to a yes, but I guess if they give him enough, he will. Lisa Murkowski is not a yes yet, although they can buy her if they commit to opening up ANWR, the wildlife refuge in Alaska, which evidently I didn't realize this was one of her father's priorities. And then Rubio is still not a yes. So they can't afford to lose any more than two of these. And if they lose three, then we have defeated the bill. So please call right now, 202-224-3121. There is nothing good in this piece of legislation. It will actually end up costing what we used to call the middle class and the working classes and people in poverty more, and busting the federal government's budget. This is an unpatriotic piece of bullshit being foisted on the American people by the unpatriotic GOP and Republican Party. Hey, John, give me a time check, if you will. Where are we at?
Let's see. You're 20 minutes into the broadcast.
All right. And let me stop for a minute right here and just read a quick poem. My friend John Case is a good Quaker, and I've gone to several Quaker meetings with him. And the Quakers, I went to meetings when I was in college as well, so I have an on-again, off-again relationship with the Friends community. And they have, and their worship has influenced my spiritual life. And so this poem starts with a nod to the Friends and to my good friend John Chase. It is the light we find in each other that leads us into our liberation struggle. Collectively, we fight the demons of death, which would turn us to only lifeless forms. We also together confront the ghosts inside that keep us apart. Our warrior women leaders remind us to leave behind privilege and patriarchy, racism and xenophobia, and homophobia outside and inside. We will not finish this in a single season of struggle. The inside fight guides the conflict outside.
Wow.
I'm hoping that'll make it into the new book.
Wow. Yeah, it's dialectical, sort of.
It's a little acknowledgement to the Friends and the Quakers, huh, John?
Yes, and the friends, of course, will offer always is always silent appreciation. And
thank you, brother. Silent appreciation.
Well, that's what it's their way, you know. Of,
right. And it's a good way. It's a righteous way.
Anyway, yes.
It doesn't always suit people like me, who are very loud, and who were raised in worship services that were very loud.
I know, energetic, energized. But yes, I know the Quaker style is considerably more laid back. That's for sure.
yeah.
I don't know. It's well, there's lots of faith traditions, and
oh yeah, absolutely. Hey, speaking of lack of faith traditions, yesterday we had a horrible incident. Was it yesterday or day before? Man, I'm telling you, these days it's hard to keep track. But the president, Romp, had some of the still alive, still surviving Navajo code talkers into the White House to, in theory or on paper, to honor them. And he, in fact, made a point, and I don't think this was ignorance, he, in fact, made a point of insulting them and slurring American Indians by once again referring to Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas, which the charge that she, the slur of calling Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, came originally from Scott Brown, who was a senator from Massachusetts, who she beat to become the new senator from Massachusetts. And when they did their opposition research from her, she noted that she, in part, was of American Indian ancestry, like a lot of us, from Oklahoma and Texas and east of there from the southeastern United States, a lot of us. And so they tried to make an issue of it and called her Pocahontas. And the president did that again as a slur and an insult. Real American heroes. These guys use the Navajo language as code during World War II because there was no way the geniuses in the Axis powers could translate the Navajo language. And so they were real heroes. They allowed us to communicate around the globe with American forces and with the forces of allied nations without being detected by the Nazis and Japanese imperialists. They deserve our honor and respect. And what Trump gave them yesterday was an insult and a slur on all American Indians. And it was not accidental, and it was not foolishness. It was direct, and it was intentional, and it was built to continue to solidify his base and shore up his base as a bulwark against what's coming, what Mueller already has in his hand against what's coming. So I wrote this poem last night about that. Has he never had a moment of self-reflection? Is nothing sacred? Can Rump's racism really be so rooted he's not aware? To use Navajo code talkers as racist props to remind American heroes of the hate of our own history continued, refusing ever to lead against racism, continuing to use America's own ugliness for racist support. A racist slur and stereotype were neither a slip nor ignorant. There is none but us nobody else to speak up and speak out. It is the most American thing to say. Rump is an abomination to all that's good in America. So, here we have turning patriotic defenders of our nation into racist props by this president. Here we have, which should be an insult to every patriotic American, and certainly every American who is of color. Here we have Rump pushing along with McConnell and along with the fascists and Nazis in the United States House of Representatives and the United States Senate. Here we have them pushing a tax scam, which is a further assault on the working families of America. And, a terrible thing to visit on us. John, can you find All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix?
I can. Yes, correct? I can. Would you like me to play it?
Yeah, would you play it? That'd be great.
Have it too. Yep.
It is a dark time, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors.
Some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine, come and dig my earth. None will level. Hey.
And we are going to be on the Watchtower today at 11 a.m. here in Martinsburg, West Virginia, 300 Foxcroft Avenue. The offices of Senator Shelley Moore Capito, the GOP dream, the Republican dream from West Virginia, who's determined to transfer more of our wealth to the richest in America, more of the wealth of one of the poorest states in America, who she's sworn to represent and to defend, and yet she today is willing to transform more of that wealth from one of the poorest states in America to the richest people in America. The very tip top of the 1%. You know, it's funny how they talk about that tax bill. So they say that, you know, doing away with the death tax will help family farms. No. The threshold for the death tax is so high. I think going into this piece of legislation, it was $4 million of family wealth passed down. Well, I don't know very many family farms that are worth $4 million. I know there are some, but I don't think there's that many.
There's a lot of family, a lot of farms.
I'm sorry, go ahead, John.
There's a lot of farms that are protected from that sort of tax, the farmland already there, because the ordinary, I think, estate exemption is about $600,000 or something like that, or maybe it's $1 million.
Yeah.
Or something like, but you know.
Yep.
Anyway,
no,
yeah.
That's a good point.
So. Okay.
But you know, they haven't let the truth get in their way.
Oh,
this
no.
Piece of legislation
no.
Or any other.
I mean, you turn on the radio, and I had actually not to be the harbinger of even more doom, but I was listening to NPR on the way up to Vermont over Thanksgiving, and various different Vermont different radio stations, and I keep hearing, you know, ads, I mean, stories slipped in that are looking at the other side where there is no other side, the other side of the Judge Roy Moore case. You know, the other side of the machine gun ban. I say, oh my God, you know, he's already pouring poison into the water fountain over there, too. And just,
you know, right. Anyway. Well, you know, they can threaten to cut off those NPR funds anytime.
Well, that's right. And I sense that the staff there is fighting back hard. I sense that they are. But, I mean, you can see that it must be very difficult.
Oh, yeah. I mean, ultimately, in a situation like this, and you and I both have faced this many times, you know, people like those reporters and editors and producers at NPR, you know, they have to make a decision. How much am I going to stand up for the truth against being able to make a living from my family? In those highly competitive environments, like media talent, you know, that's not an easy decision to make.
Thank God for Jeff Bezos, who hates Trump so much, apparently, that his reporters, man, they caught that woman that tried to snake them. You know, from one of the. One of these people that did the job against Acorn. You probably know something about that.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
same group
yeah.
of... what a nasty bunch of people. Oh,
oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. The folks from Breitbart. That's how the first way I got aware of Breitbart was when they attacked me, leading to a mailed death threat. When Breitbart attacked me for besting Senator Joe Arpaio, not Senator, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, on a debate on Fox News. And Breitbart blasted me, and 2 days later I got a death threat in the mail from something called, it was typed, from something called the militia, which could have been, you know, one very pissed off, embittered person. But they, whoever sent it threatened to stalk me and kill me, which, which, you know, phoned in death threats don't get the attention of very much of anybody, but mail death threats, if you use the United States Mail Postal Service, yeah, it attracts a lot of attention. But yeah, those Breitbart, James O'Keefe was the guy's name who produced those phony videos.
Oh, okay.
That brought down Acorn.
Well, this is the same guy that's involved with the outfit where this woman showed up, who had come in and falsely claimed to have been assaulted by Judge Roy Moore. And and then there was going to be a sting operation where if they print the story, then they're going to come out and show that it's false, and they're, you know, lying Washington Post, right? And,
right.
So, but these reporters that got on and they filmed the whole thing about following this woman back to her, we now can presume, employer, this fellow O'Keefe, who was came out and denied, refused to comment on anything. And actually, he published, I think, a video that they had used, as usual, completely doctored to say what the exchange was. But since the Post already planned for that, and they had the whole thing filmed themselves, all of it. So that was just great, and I applaud the Washington Post and Jeff Bezos at least on this score for. All right, buddy, go for it.
I've got a buddy who writes for the Washington Post in Silver Spring. Actually, we're friends because our sons were best friends at one time. Years ago, and I see him often when I go back to see my kids, which is, as most of the listeners know, is I try to make a couple times a month. But Mike works for the Washington Post, and he said, it is so wonderful to think that institution is alive now, because print journalism was on its way out pretty quickly when Donald Trump got elected, and now I guess the Post, the Washington Post, and the New York Times have had quite a growth in subscribers, and,
yes, they have.
Which is good for democracy. It's good for America. Print journalism is very important.
Well, also, I think they're getting digital subscribers have gone up big time, but they are still losing, revenue, I think, on the print page. I saw an article by David Leonard in the, on New York Times. Yeah, they picked up tons of subscriptions, but not as much on the print side. So anyway, but I understand that this is interesting. I saw a poll where it said that same is true of late night comedy, like for example. The more politically oriented shows, Colbert, and I guess it was Jimmy Kimmel or something like that. Whatever the more they're doing
Jimmy
better.
Kimmel,
they're
Seth,
doing better.
Myers, and
the
John,
one
John who's the Noah Trevor.
But Jimmy Fallon, not so much.
I watch those guys two nights later on my phone almost every night.
But Jimmy Fallon, not so much, they say. Jimmy Fallon, who tried to steer a little bit more middle, and...
Yeah. No, Fallon...
Losing audience. Yeah.
Colbert is killing it, though.
He
is. My God, he's killing it.
He's so smart.
Every night.
I know.
He's just a really funny guy, but he's merciless with his attacks on Trump. And Kimmel, of course, has taken a lot of this Trump crap. Personally, and it's good to watch, but it has a cost.
Yeah.
This destruction of American democracy, this stagnation of wages, this crushing of the middle class, it has a cost. And we experience that cost here in the Eastern Panhandle every day in watching people around us fall victim to the diseases of despair. So I wrote this true poem. Every word of it is true. It's autobiographical. and about these diseases of despair. Last week, after a meeting, a friend on heroin asked me about his trial. He doesn't deal, but he got caught in a sweep. Charged with conspiracy because he called his dealer. 25 years he's headed for, or five in a plea for someone's politics. My friend is in his own hell, prison for his addiction. More and more in private prisons. The largest incarceration in our world. Busting budgets, ruining lives, for suffering the diseases of despair. Part of the price of putrid politics and an economy devoted to only those on top. Hey, John, can you play that song by Neil Young,
Sure.
Needle and the Damage Done?
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
Since I left Canada about 5 years ago, so I moved down south. Found out a lot of things that I didn't know when I left. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. Got to see a lot of great musicians before they happened, before they became famous. You're knocking at my cellar door. I love you, baby. Can I have some more? Gone, gone, damaged time. I hit the city and I lost my band. I watched the needle take another man. I sing the song because I love the man. I know that some of you won't understand. Bill, but to keep from running out. I've seen the needle and the damage done. A little part of it in everyone. And every junkie's like a setting sun.
Pure, unadulterated, Canadian American genius, Uncle Neil Young. Uncle Neil.
That's right.
As John and I say, one of the greatest songwriters and poets in America, in the Western Hemisphere.
The English speaking or singing world, he's pretty well. I would say he's made it pretty much around the world. You know, he does tours in Japan all the time. I know, so
yeah,
used to. I don't know, he still does.
Just a great talent,
Had a biography out not too long ago, that autobiography, in which he was very generous to all of his bandmates and friends over the years. Really, that was the most the interesting observations and the least rancorous of tell all things, rock and roll stuff that I've read. I don't read a lot of it, but his was
right.
Very generous spirited autobiography. If anyone's interested.
You know, I'd always heard that the problem with the band Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young was that he and Stephen Stills couldn't get along. But now I've read recently that they were very close. It wasn't his problem with Stills at all. So who knows? But then who knows what it's like to play with the same group of guys, go on tour, and basically live with...
For years.
Yeah. Three or four. Yeah, for years with the same guys.
Right.
It's got to make you
right.
A little crazy.
Every year. Some
point.
And then you gotta
especially when everybody's messed up all the time.
Right. And, you know, you got to record, and, you know, all your marriages broke up because they found out
right.
That you had free sex right. Everywhere you wanted to go, all over the country. And so...
Right.
I mean, that was
right.
Just, right, yeah, you can see how it'd be very destructive. Yeah.
Hey, John, I'm gonna shut us down here in a minute. I got to get out to this demonstration.
Well, sing some carols. You got to, yes, right.
Sing carols at 11 a.m.
No, I think it works good. It's good. Do you want to go out with a particular message? Or
why don't we go out with Carry On, because
okay.
We got to carry on. It, nothing ends today. It keeps going, and we got to carry on. Thanks to my great friend and leader, John Case. Thanks to everybody within the sound of my voice. You've been listening to Resistance Radio on www.enlightenradio.org. And this is your host, Stuart Acuff, for Resistance Radio. Talk to you next week, brothers and sisters. Thank you, John Case.
Thank you.
God bless.
There we go. Yeah.